Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Good evening and welcome to the Independent Republic of Mike Graham with me, JJ Anisyobi. You're with Talk on TV, on radio, online and on your smart speaker. Coming up, the Home Secretary orders a meeting with church leaders after it's revealed the Clapham chemical attacker was granted asylum despite lying about his faith. Plus, a senior army general has warned Britain doesn't have enough money to buy ammunition that it needs to defend itself. And P. Diddy has his LA and Miami mansions trashed during drug and trafficking raids. His legal team deny any wrongdoing, though. But what's all this got to do with Prince Harry? Good evening, Britain, and welcome to the Independent Republic of JJ Anisyobi. I'll be holding the fort whilst Mike takes a well-earned break. And it's all kicking off tonight on the show as we've got plenty of action for you. First up, more drama for Labour, as the Shadow Deputy Prime Minister has a police investigation into her council house claims reopened. Plus, we're on migrant watch as it's revealed a record number of people crossed the channel in the first 3 months of 2024. And find out why I am absolutely furious over a woke rebrand of Cadbury's chocolate. This is the Independent Republic. I'm the new dictator. Let's start the show. A record 4,644 migrants have crossed the English Channel in the first 3 months of the year, with 338 arrivals detected yesterday alone. But it's not just the number of people arriving that's drawing criticism, but the fact that criminals are being granted asylum here in the UK. Images of Clapham chemical attacker Abdul Azizi being baptised have been circulating. He was allowed to stay in the UK after he claimed he'd converted to Christianity despite being convicted of sexual assault. Right, now, let's bring in my war cabinet. Journalist Eve Torfik, Director of Communications at the Henry Jackson Society, Megan Guitos, and barrister and loudmouth, Andrew Eborn. Now, look, the three of you, this is my show, this is my republic now. When you greet me, I want to salute. Now, thank you.
Absolutely. We
there you go, Eborn, right, thank
Eborn's
you.
Eborn's there.
Thank
congratulations
you.
On the coup, JJ.
It's been a very successful one. I could. Yeah. Finally, I got rid of the concrete grower. Anyway, let's start with you, Eborn.
Yes.
Azizi.
Yes.
How did he manage to game the system so easily?
It is, well, you say gaming the system, this is the thing, when and we've got to separate those who are entitled to be here mm-hmm. and the justifiable reasons and those who basically, as you say, game the system.
Yeah.
And this is talking about abuse. And when there's been abuse, when people pretend to convert to Christianity, which is what happened here, it was very clear that he pretended because he surrounded himself with his old non-Christian mates and so on and so
well,
forth.
Well, Christians can have non-Christian friends.
Like occasionally, but they said...
Occasionally?
Not on a Sunday. No, but you're right. But apparently, to everybody, they all knew it was just a big joke. And nobody believed in his whole sort of side that he was a Christian. So it was an abuse of the system. So that's the principle. So is the system right? If it's right, that's fine. If it's being abused, then call out the abuse. And this was an abuse and it should be called out.
Eborn, I'm still stuck on the part of you saying Christians can't be friends with non-Christians.
I didn't say Christians
can't be friends. That's basically what you're saying.
You know what?
I'm going to go to Eve. Do you think he gamed the system properly? Or do you think maybe he did convert to Christianity because he really believed that he'd found the light in Jesus Christ? And then afterwards, he was like, actually, this ain't what it's cracked up to be.
That is a slight possibility, but I'm not really buying it. And I also think this is reflective of the church's desperation to recruit people. You know, you see them now very accepting. Before, it was a bit more discerning who could join the church. And now it's, you know, a free-for-all. And I think that's very demonstrative in what's happened here.
Well, Megan, I don't understand this because I'm a Catholic. When I wanted to get married, I had to go through months of rehearsals and lessons with my local priest. This guy took, they call it an alpha course, which takes like two, 3 weeks. You can even do it faster than that if you want to, if you do it every day. And then suddenly this reverend was like, no, yeah, I completely buy it. So how, do you think this is not going to be the only case of this happening?
No, of course it's not going to be the only case. You do mention two quite different things.
Using
a church for your wedding venue and joining are two very different things. However, I don't think he's gamed the system. I think our system is by design there to be gamed. And I sound exceptionally harsh because I really do believe genuine Christians are being, it's not a belief, it's an objective fact, they're being persecuted all over the world and some of them need refuge. Mm-hmm. But the system is set up so bureaucratic at the moment with the numbers we have to get through that the fact on these grounds an appeal, even though he was a convicted sex offender, has allowed him to stay, means that the system is just, it's by design. And some would argue he just used, the tools that were in front of him.
So Christians are being persecuted the world over, granted, but he wasn't a Christian where he was.
No, I know.
He came here and then applied, three times to stay? Denied.
No.
And then he's a Christian, which is a big difference. If he was coming over from Afghanistan
difference.
Saying, I'm a Christian and they're going to kill me back there, I'd be like, oh, OK, but that ain't what he did.
Huge difference. I was kind of just highlighting, you know, that has to stay, I would argue, has to stay. A right to be able to be granted asylum in the UK. But the issue I have here is more the sexual assault conviction, that it really was that easy for him.
Mm-hmm.
And we have to have some red lines. And right now, our system doesn't have any.
So that's the point, though, isn't it? So there's two things saying, look, what do the rules currently say and what's an abuse of the rules?
Mm-hmm.
So going back to your very starting point, if he were a Christian, it's appalling the persecutions that happened to Christians and others around the world,
mm-hmm.
and we need to guard against that. The fact that a convicted sex offender could still get the relevant permissions is something they need to look at and call out. So the one thing is look at the system at the moment, check the rules and make sure they're stable.
Yeah.
And if they're not stable, deal with those and then work out the abuses and deal with that as well.
So, Eve, how do we stop this from happening again? I know Ebourne's saying we've got to change the rules, but how do we stop more independent churches going out and vouching for these people?
I think there needs to be some sort of screening process. I think people need to have their background checked. And I think it's less an issue here of religion and more one that he was a sex offender. I don't think it matters what his religion is. I think it's a nice line, you know, sex offender got into our country via the church. However, there are sex offenders within the church, people mm-hmm. who are non-migrants who are sex offenders.
Mm-hmm.
I think just generally we need to be more cautious and more vigilant about looking out for these people, these offenders. I mean, it happened years ago with Ian Huntley, haven't we learned? I mean, police sharing information, that needs to be happening more. So it needs to be a collective effort from all of our institutions.
It's strange that the Home Office judges were not aware of his sex offending. When he had the second appeal, they didn't mention at all that he'd been previously done for sexual assault and flashing. It was just so. Is it the Home Office that is really the problem here, or should this church, Reverend Roy Merrin, is the one who spoke in his defence?
It's very simple. The question says: do the laws currently, as they stand, stack up? And if they'd known that information, would it have made a difference?
Mm-hmm.
If it would have made a difference, then clearly the rules are right at the moment. If it doesn't make a difference, then the rules need to be changed. Looking at the other side and about claiming to be a Christian, whether that's true or not, we need to make sure that the mischief that's being guarded against, which is persecution around the world, is properly enforced. And you basically look at that and say, if they are genuinely Christian, then absolutely that's the reason that safeguard is put in place. And we need to make sure that stays in place but is not abused.
Megan, let's move on to these record numbers of people crossing the seas here. So, stop the boats, Rishi Sunak, that's his big phrase, one of his pledges, one of his many planks, I'd say. It ain't working. In fact, it's getting worse.
No, and this is a huge problem for certainly every Western nation across the country, and we'll see it as the world goes to the polls this year. There's elections being had everywhere. Immigration is a problem in the United States. It's at record numbers. Across Europe, it's at record numbers. So it's not like little old England can solve the problems of the world, but we do need to get to grips with it. We are in no way equipped for what is about to happen. And I don't say that as someone catastrophizing,
mm-hmm.
but the United Nations, the World Health Organization, has said this situation is the migrant global migrant crisis is only going to get worse.
Yeah.
And that is why the United Nations especially might need a little bit of reform.
Well, Eve, Megan touched on the problems in the US with their immigration problem, more so on their southern borders. On the Mexico side of the Rio Bravo, I think it's called, for them, they have signs up saying that there's gators in the water. The current itself is strong enough that people get washed away on a daily basis.
Yeah.
It's still not enough to stop hundreds of thousands of people from going across. So why does Sunak think if people are going to jump on dinghies that are liable to sink across, coming across to England, why does he think that saying to them, if you come across, we're going to pay you £3,000 and send you to Rwanda, potentially?
Yeah, I mean, this is a humanitarian issue, and I often view it from that lens. I know the country isn't equipped for it, and I think but when I see pictures of small children who are displaced, that does make me feel, you know, if my family were in that situation, I would probably do the same. Mm-hmm. You know, I do feel as a global community, something needs to be done about this. But at the same time, the UK needs to look after its own as well. You know, we need to be equipped to look after the people that we have in this country.
Yeah.
And also, migration and immigration has been good for this country over time. London is a cosmopolitan city. I don't think we should lose that.
Yeah, no, I agree. Look, both my parents were migrants to this country.
Same here.
Yeah.
Well, my father was.
The only downside for them is that I'm still here now. That's a big problem for this country. Eborn. 480 million quid was that Anglo-French deal.
Crazy. Absolutely crazy.
We got more cops on the beaches, up to 800 cops patrolling.
It's complete nonsense, isn't it? And Rwanda's become a nasty word and so on and so forth. And Abraham Lincoln, who said that if you count the tail of a dog as a leg, how many legs does a dog have? And the answer is still four, because just because you call it a leg doesn't make a tail so. And that's the same with Rwanda about it being safe. And that's what the whole thing about changing the law is. But you need to look at the statistics. Rwanda itself can only handle 200 people, is what they say at the moment.
Yeah.
And the FT estimated last week it's about 250,000 per person.
Yeah.
So it's completely wrong. As I always say, the focus should be on the abhorrent practices of the people traffickers. Mm-hmm. What we need to look at is to stop that appalling trade. Stop making it attractive to come over. Mm-hmm. But also work on a PR campaign, and I think they've started to do this, to tell people, not only is it not safe, but your money's not going to be worthwhile on that sort of basis. If you can tell us about who these people traffickers are, we can do something with it. But we need to do, JJ, is put it into perspective. The figures last year, looking at the government website, forget the 200, forget the tens of thousands of people who are coming on boats, there were 3.3 million visas granted in the year to June 2023. And of those, about 538,887 were work visas, and 657,000 were study visas. Uh-huh. So we need to look at the whole picture when we're looking at migration and net migration. We need a certain amount for the workforce to make that make sense, but we need to look at the whole picture. And what I love about this show, especially when Mike does it and you do it as well so brilliantly, is we always shine more light and less heat on the subject. Let's look at the figures. Mm-hmm. Let's work out whether there's been abuse. But let's target the real issue, which are the abhorrent people traffickers.
Well, thanks for the statistics there, you nerd.
I think that's good. And I had them all memorised, you see. I do my homework for this brilliant show.
Megan, the government have been doing adverts in Vietnam to try and stop at the source. We know they're doing adverts on social media, on TikTok, to try and say, if you come to the UK, it's not going to be a bed of roses for you. Is that going to work? Are people going to pay any attention to that, really?
I'm not sure. I really don't know. You have to look at the wider context. That's where people are being advertised to on social media platforms and sites like Gumtree, not the exact one. Sorry for saying the brand name, but like a kind of one in
Tomorrow Public. Say what you want here.
You know, and it's people are being advertised to by people traffickers themselves on TikTok, and it is a really inexpensive way to get out information. And it seems silly, a government advertising that, you know, you're not going to be treated very nicely, you will be sent back. Mm-hmm. But what else? What else is there really?
Eve, are we beholden by our own great laws and long history? Because if you go to Pakistan, they just deported about 500,000 Afghanistani refugees, and they just said, we've had several terrorist attacks, some perpetrated, some done by Afghan refugees, so now you're all going. And they are just rounding people up, even Afghans who've been born there now, being rounded up and sent back.
See, I think that's abhorrent. I don't agree with that at all. I think that's when you are born in a country and raised in the laws and ways of that country. I don't think you should be sent back like, you know, like a sheep or something. I don't think that's okay. I also think the whole TikTok campaign, the demographic, are they looking at these videos? A significant amount of money has gone into it. Not a huge amount, but significant.
Yeah.
That could have probably gone to something better. And I don't think they're consuming these videos and go, oh, I better not come then. You know, these people are in really difficult situations. They're being trafficked. They're maybe in a war zone. They may be in gangs. And, you know, the idea, oh, well, we might get sent back. Well, I'll take the gamble.
Of course. I wasn't saying they won't take the gamble, but trafficking often involves a lot of lying.
Yeah.
And so when they're being advertised to on TikTok, and when I say inexpensive way to get out, I mean on the grand scheme of things in terms of government money.
Yeah, definitely.
It is a tiny amount of money. Obviously, if you're a startup company, makeup company, you're not going to spend that initial money on an advertising campaign.
Uh-huh.
But this is where they're consuming information, and where else are they going to hear from the British government?
Well,
and people traffickers lie. That's the thing. They're being lied to. And
but then, as Ebourne says, we've got to target them first. Listen, Cabinet. Take a break. You'll be back with me a little bit later. You are watching the Independent Republic of JJ and Nisiobe. After the break, Britain's secret courts are prosecuting vulnerable people behind closed doors, while trials by jury could be a thing of the past. More on this after the break. Welcome back. You're watching the Independent Republic of JJ and Nisiobe. Trial by jury could be a thing of the past for some offences if one of the country's top judges has their way. Baroness Carr of Walton-on-the-Hill, the Lady Chief Justice, said scrutiny is required to deal with the 66,500 cases stacked up in the courts post-COVID. Her comments have drawn a strong reaction, though, with fears the move would undermine the justice system. It comes as the scandal of the single justice procedure in courts grows, with hundreds of thousands of people being prosecuted for motoring offences and not paying their TV licences without a proper court hearing. Joining me now to discuss all of this is Andrew Ebourne, barrister and broadcaster. Andrew, first of all, what is a single justice procedure?
Very simple.
Because we don't have it here. In the Independent Republic, we don't have that kind of thing.
We don't have any laws.
No laws.
No laws.
What I say is law.
I totally understand that, JJ, which is why you call me Ebourne.
That's right.
Back to boarding school. What it basically is, it's to speed up the whole process. So it's like simple things, such as if you don't pay your TV licence, you get a fine for doing that. If they're minor traffic things. So the idea is for when it's that, you don't have to turn up to court to defend yourself. The problem with the system is that some people are vulnerable. They might have really good reasons why they haven't done it. For example, if there's somebody with a particular disability or they're being abused at home or whatever, you've had all sorts of situations like that, which could be a plea in mitigation. And if you're not there to make the plea in mitigation, it means that you'll be convicted in any event. So the difficulty is exactly that. They're turning around and saying there are people who would otherwise maybe get off or a more lenient sentence and not being represented in court, and as a result, the penalties are too severe.
Well, as my personal legal advisor, how would you reform the system?
First thing I'll do is send an invoice to you in the post as your personal legal advisor. You haven't paid any of the other ones. No chance of that. What would I do? I mean, the basic principle is this, JJ. Justice is not just to be done, but to be seen to be done.
Yeah.
So we have horrible backlogs in courts at the moment. So the way that you can speed it up has got to be a good thing. But at the same time, the jury system, which is what you started on in your brilliant monologue at the beginning, the jury system, as your personal lawyer, I can say that. The jury system basically said it's a fundamental human right to be tried by your peers for certain things. And you have some types of cases. Smaller cases can be decided by magistrates, but other cases, you have a choice. You can either have it decided by a magistrate or you can go to the Crown Court. And a lot of people opt to have a trial by jury because they think you're more likely to get off.
But is that more expensive, having a trial by jury?
It takes longer, and this is why there's this big backlog, because you've got to get the right jurors and so on and so forth. You have to obviously pay lawyers to do that sort of stuff.
So just scrap it, then.
Well, this is what has been proposed on that sort of basis.
I support it. I agree with that. Get rid of it.
Then scrap all laws. It is guilty. Just save time. Take all their assets.
Yeah.
Work on that
Seize
basis.
Them.
Well, this is a fundamental principle of law, is that you've got the right to be tried by your peers. And it goes back to zillions of years. It's one of the cornerstones of the legal system here. But in the Republic, I think you're right. Just confiscate all their assets and you're covered.
If we change the law...
Yes.
And we say... when we change the law and we say... no more trial by jury for some cases.
Yes.
That's not going to really undermine the justice system, is it?
Well, people want the right to be tried by their peers. That is the fundamental point of the... Of the
over what? Over not paying your car fine?
Oh, no, no, that's different. Those would never be tried by jury.
Right.
So there's two separate things. One of these small cases, which is like TV licence or driving fines, where you don't have to turn up to court and they can basically just deal with it in your absence.
If I don't pay my TV licence, which I don't think we should pay it anyway, to be honest, that's a different...
Don't encourage people to commit criminal offences. As your lawyer, I advise you otherwise. Yes.
If I don't pay it... And I get summons to well, I get summons to court, to have, and I have to say to the court, I'd like to be tried by jury, or that's
no, no, option. That would never happen. It's not
so
one of those offences.
What small cases are likely to have me?
Well, it might be theft or whatever it is.
Why would you suggest theft to me?
Oh, I'm not suggesting. I'm just,
why you picked a random crime, theft.
Well, what crimes do you want? I don't come in with a tooth-drag salesman. Pick a crime, any crime at all. You asked about it, so. The small crimes is to deal with very quickly. So we have different systems. You have the magistrates' court, which tend to hear smaller crimes, and the crown court, which hear bigger crimes, in essence. Things like not paying a TV licence, things like driving fines are all dealt with by magistrates, and that's the procedure for speeding it up. But as I say, the difficulty, the abuse of the system, if you like, is it's not making more vulnerable people who might have a cause in mitigation, where you can get a reduced sentence. Those particular cases are not being heard in the right way, and this is what they're objecting to. And the separate thing is about trial by jury, and what's being suggested is that some cases could be heard just by the judges instead of by jury, because it would speed up the backlog.
Or by the dictator in charge.
Or by the dictator. Everybody's guilty, as you said.
That's it.
Guilty, give me all your assets.
That's it.
You said.
But we have a massive backlog because of COVID.
And that's the problem.
Yeah, so then how do we get through that? To me, this seems like a great idea to get through that backlog very quickly.
Well, as you know, I speak around the world as a futurist, back to the futurist, about artificial intelligence and how that can decide a lot of cases. Oh, no, it does.
I don't want robots deciding my future.
Well, but they are going to decide your future, whether you like it or not.
Well, I don't like it.
Well, I know, we're tough, because they will. And I always say that AI is our greatest human achievement, but also the biggest existential threat. And when I speak around the world advising companies about these sort of things, you have to understand what it can do. And a lot of legal systems, what they're doing, they're helping with the backlog, helping with the administration, helping decide cases, and the advantages for that, it does speed up the system.
But Ebourne, all I ever hear about these days is Russia have got into this technology this way, and China are going through your data. What's to stop any of these big evil superpowers manipulating the robots and saying, yeah, these guys are all guilty. Well, and actually, these criminals and these terrorists, not guilty. So, and it's sorted.
And you're absolutely right. Well, you have to be absolutely aware of what the systems can do and be aware of the abuse. It's one of the biggest discussions at the moment. Data, as I said for years, is the new currency. The more information you give about it, if a product's free, you are the product.
Yeah.
And so when you're signing up and saying, this is what my birthday is, here's my favourite colour, here's the name of my child who fell off a bike, all that sort of stuff, you tell them they're going to get all that information and use it.
Yeah.
And this is why people are worried about things like TikTok. Mm-hmm. And the big debate at the moment is, who is going to get this data and what can they do with that data?
Well, with robots and the juries, what would you rather have, be judged by the robots or judged by the jury?
Well, I'm not guilty of anything, so I don't need to be judged.
I'll be a judge of that, mate.
Thank you. No, the reality is this, and this is what robots have got a bad rap. And I will be... I am the
Terminator.
But that's the bad side of it. You look at things, for example, like what Elon's doing with the brain thing, where you can have implants in the brain, and you get people who've been paralysed for years, and all of a sudden you're getting seismic advances in technology, are curing that sort of
side. Yeah, that's great. What's that got to do with whether I pay my TV licence, mate?
Well, no, but you're talking about a system. You're talking about making...
I'm saying, is it better for us to be judging crimes off robots who can be programmed and they're going to have faults because they're created by man, or a jury of 12 of our peers?
Who could be programmed by man even more so and even greater influence. Now, what you need is safeguards. So the important thing is getting those guardrails in place. And actually, a robot is less likely to be manipulated than a human. And I've been in court. I mean, you've worked on that sort of basis.
Yeah. It's
sometimes your best advocate is what decides the case. And you work on that sort of principle. AI will get rid of the impartiality. It will make sure there's consistency.
No, it won't.
Absolutely.
It's already got inbuilt biases already from man.
But this is what they're doing. They're correcting those biases. If you understand what those are, you can build in the safeguards. So you're more likely to have consistency of judgment and work on that premise.
Well, When will this happen? In my lifetime, I've got about 50 years left, I reckon, on this planet.
I reckon, yes, yeah. It won't be on this planet. You'll be on another planet in 50 years. You'll be exploring Mars.
So when do you think we're going to have robots deciding cases?
They're already deciding it.
So where? In what banana republic?
Well, no, in China, in various other places, they're speeding things up, but they are. And the efficiency being introduced right now, right here, right now, are tremendous. So we should look at that. Also, I mean, it's bizarre as well. Some of these legal cases, the trouble is lawyers are relying too much on it. And I'll give you an example. In the States, what happened? There was a case, a negligence case, about somebody who was injured by one of these trolleys on an airline. And, you know, they're coming down
with peanuts
for everybody, even if you're allergic. They give you peanuts. And what happened? They got banged on the knee. And the lawyer in the States, they looked up the case, they tapped into ChatGPT, give me some precedents, and they got three cases, which sounded brilliant. This airline against that person, all the cases were won. So they quoted it in the court. The trouble is, ChatGPT had made up all the cases.
Right.
And the judge said to them, I'm sorry, Mr. JJ, none of these cases are true. And so the person was held to be in contempt of court and so on and so forth as a result of it. So ChatGPT and other programs, they hallucinate. This is what they called. If they don't know the answer, they will hallucinate and come up with an appropriate answer.
Right, so you said that China... I asked you the question, who's got the robots working on the case? You said China. Is there any... a country that's actually a democracy.
It's happening as well in the States as well. That's a democracy. Yeah. That's, last time I checked.
That's a place where people had to carry guns and shoot alligators and stuff.
I think those in America would say they're a democracy. Absolutely. And I think if you look on that sort of way, but also in this country, we're bringing in efficiencies in the courtrooms as we speak to make it more efficient. So using AI to basically get rid of those laborious tasks to make sure you can get people tried a lot quicker. So in answer to your question, how do we make it more efficient? My answer is I'm here to bring the AI into Britain. And I think AI is absolutely the solution.
I think that is a terrible idea. Ebourne, get back to the cabinet room. I'll speak to you later. Right, you are watching the Independent Republic of JJ and Issyopi. And after the break, we take a look at the dire state of military affairs in Britain. That's according to experts who said we would last only 2 months in an all-out war with Russia. You don't want to miss this. Welcome back. You're watching the Independent Republic of JJ and Issyopi. Now, in the annual military shopping list sent by the armed forces, Lieutenant General Sir Rob McGowan has made a shocking revelation that Britain simply does not manufacture enough bullets for any kind of sustained military operation. Current spending on munitions, he says, do not meet the threats we face. Pressure is mounting on Rishi Sunak from Grant Shapps to increase defence spending to 3% of GDP. Former Armed Forces Minister Marc Francois, who sits on the Defence Select Committee, has said the UK is virtually blind to an incoming aerial assault. Joining me down the line from Birmingham is former senior military intelligence officer Philip Ingram. Good evening, Philip.
Good evening.
Where do you start with procurement? Do we start building our air defence? Is it missiles? Should we be focusing on munitions first?
It's slightly more basic than that. There's two elements to it. One is the stocks of ammunition that the Minister of Defence will hold. And the big ammunition that they're talking about are not bullets, it's artillery shells, it's missiles, and that sort of level, and bombs for aircraft. And those stocks have to be bought, held somewhere, sustained, maintained, and then replaced because they've got a shelf life. And then there's the defence industrial base that's behind that that needs to be able to step up and manufacture more of this stuff whenever you need it. And what Ukraine has done is it's shown that we don't have enough in store and stocked for what Ukraine is using in a high-intensity conflict, and we don't have a strong enough defence industrial base to step up and manufacture the volumes that we need in the time that would be needed to try and replace those stocks if we're using them. That is being fixed at the moment.
So with the potential threat of Russia, how long would it take for us to turn this around? Do we have even enough time to turn this around?
Well, you know, we'd started turning it around about 2 years ago once Russia did this reinvasion of Ukraine, and we suddenly realised the expenditure of ammunition and artillery ammunition and missiles that the Ukrainians are having to use to push the Russians back. And it's not just the Russian threat. You know, we're looking at the Iranian threat, we're looking at the Chinese threat, we're looking at the potential for high-intensity conventional conflict in any operational theatre. And that has shocked a number of people. To rebuild our defence industrial base, is a 5 to 10 year program. So we are 2 years into that now, but we've had this kick up the backside to start it. And it's going to start producing additional capability at the end of this year, early next year. And it's not just in the UK, this is across the whole of Europe and the whole of NATO contributing countries as well. And I suspect it's across the rest of the world, those countries that are not as defence focused as Russia, China, Iran and all the rest of it is. And then that will mean that our defence budget's going to have to expand because we're going to have to hold more stock and we're going to have to replace that stock more frequently. So you need more money to be able to do that. That's no bad thing for our economy.
Well, we've given billions of pounds to Ukraine, as have the Americans. Where has that money gone? What's that been spent on? If we're not even buying bullets, well, where's it going?
Ah, well, this is where the money comes in two things. It's equipment we have already bought that we're donating to them, and we add the value of that up and give to them. Now, that equipment has been manufactured principally in the UK. UK suppliers have still provide the spare parts for it and all the rest of it. So as it's supplied to Ukraine, you know, we've bought it. It's our jobs that has contributed to the taxes in the UK that have built it. It's gone off. And it's our manufacturing capability that's going to sustain it with the spare parts and with everything else. It's the same when it comes to ammunition. You know, we say we're going to give the Ukrainians, you know, £1 billion or £1 billion worth of ammunition. That ammunition, we don't give them the cash and that ammunition is somehow bought by the Ukrainians from somewhere. We turn around, we give them $1 billion worth of ammunition. That ammunition is manufactured primarily in UK-based companies. So we've got BAE Systems manufacturing the 155 millimetre artillery shells. We've got RG Radley and Green manufacturing as part of BAE Systems manufacturing the ammunition that they're going to be using. We've got Thales in Belfast manufacturing some of the anti-tank missiles that they've got. So what that's doing is it's increasing the manufacturing capability in this country. That means we need more jobs. That means we need more supply industries supplying into UK manufacturers. That means there's more people paying taxes. And that means we've got more opportunities for the UK economy to grow because we're spending that money at home. But we're helping try and save having to have a much greater expenditure should the Russians decide that Ukraine isn't enough for them and they want to go elsewhere.
So, Philip, you talk about us needing to produce more, but in Northern Ireland, there's a weapons production plant, Thales UK. It's doubled and is set to double again following Russia's war in Ukraine. They're making missiles. I mean, they're doing all kinds of military equipment. Why are we not just taking the stuff from them?
Well, we are taking the stuff from them, but they've got a capacity and the capacity has been based on how much we've been buying so far. So there's no point in them having the ability to produce 100,000 missiles a year if the British military only requires 20,000 missiles a year. And therefore, their capacity and the number of people they employ, the production lines they've got, the supply chains they've set up are for those 20,000 missiles. What Ukraine has shown is we need 100,000 or more. So that capacity is being increased. But it takes time to build the manufacturing facilities to increase that capacity. It takes time to recruit the manpower and the workforce that's needed so that get them trained up to the standards to be able to produce this high-tech equipment that's in there. And that's why it takes years to be able to build the capacity up to do this sort of stuff. And that's why, from a defence perspective, what Vladimir Putin has done is he's almost done us a favour because he's given us a bit of a warning and a bit of a kick up the backside to get all of this sorted before we have to get involved in a major conflict, if we have to do. But this is all stuff that has to be done before the conflict starts. And it takes a long time to get sorted out. And we're starting to get that sorted.
Well, last year, Ben Wallace, when he was Defence Secretary, said that the military would reallocate £2.5 billion to boost its ammunition stockpiles. So what happened to that plan? Why was that not done?
Well, he started to reallocate that. But that's last year. Part of that reallocation is building up this additional defence manufacturing capability. You know, I worked, before I got into the media business, I worked in a company that supplied components to defence. It takes a long time to build this manufacturing capability up. And that £2.5 billion doesn't go very far. whenever you're having to look at building new manufacturing sites, employing thousands more people to come in, been able to bring in the raw materials, the steel that's needed to make the shells, the electronics that's needed to go into the fusing systems that are in there, or the guidance systems for high-tech missiles and all the rest of it, the training that's needed to get the engineers that you have to do. So it, you know, it's bringing together academia, manufacturing and all the rest of it, and integrating that into the wider defence game. We'd forgotten that after the Cold War. There used to be a very close relationship. That disappeared whenever everyone thought that it was going to be peace in our time, and the stocks that the UK held were enough for, you know, I think two or three months of high intensity conflict. That was the maximum that people would be planning for, and that's what General Rob McGowan had brought out in his evidence to the Defence Select Committee. The situation has changed, and Ukraine has focused people's mind that the situation has changed, and things are changing, but it will take time to get it right.
So, Philip, very briefly, please. We don't have enough munitions, but we also don't have enough boots on the ground. So what is the point in us then trying to get more bullets and more missiles and more bombs if we haven't got the personnel to actually use them?
We have to work all of it simultaneously. You know, defence, I support the idea that defence gets more money, but defence needs to learn how to spend the money it's got better, and in that, recruit and retain the people that it's got at the moment. There are some appalling activities going on in defence that are causing people to leave. They need to fix all of that before we give them more money.
OK, Philip Ingram, thank you so much for your time. Absolutely fantastic. Right, you are watching The Independent Republic of JJ and Nis Yobe. And after the break, we'll be talking about the aftermath of the raid of Sean Diddy Combs' mansion and why Prince Harry's name has been dragged into it. Don't go anywhere. Welcome back. You are watching The Independent Republic of JJ and Nis Yobe. Sean Diddy Combs' mansions in Los Angeles and Miami have been torn apart in a sex trafficking probe which saw armoured trucks, helicopters and swarms of federal agents descend on his properties. This comes as lawsuits against him are mounting, with claimants accusing the hip-hop star of trafficking, sexual abuse, drugging and domestic violence. Homeland Security released footage of the raid, showing his bedroom strewn with documents, pill bottles and safes that were blown open. The 54-year-old star says he is the victim of a quote-unquote witch hunt, and it is now believed he's fled to Antigua. Documents from one $30 million lawsuit have also named a number of stars, including the Duke of Sussex, Prince Harry. After the raids, footage has resurfaced of Usher talking about the time he spent at Diddy's mansion when he was 13 years old.
Hey, it was curious. I got a chance to see some things.
Yeah, but you were 13. What were you seeing?
I went there to see the lifestyle.
Right.
And I saw it. And it was, but I don't know if I could indulge and understand what I was even looking at. It was pretty wild. It was,
so nobody tried to, you know, some woman didn't come along.
I didn't say that.
Okay.
I didn't say that. What I did say is that there were very curious things taking place.
Uh-huh.
And I didn't necessarily understand it.
Disgusting. Joining me now is showbiz journalist and television presenter Rebecca Toomey. Bex, what is the situation for Diddy now, and should we have seen this coming?
This is a really awful, dark, horrible story to even be talking about. You know, these are multiple allegations against him, all of which he does deny, but they're stacking up against him, and some are from women, and some are from a producer he's worked with very recently, a male producer. So it doesn't look great. It doesn't look great either that he's not stayed in the US. He's not kind of, you know, as appears to be at the moment, he's just released that statement you said about saying it's a witch hunt. But I think with a lot of these stories, industry people know for a long time, they hear rumours, there's murmurings, there might be someone on the internet releasing some footage, making claims. And then as momentum gains, suddenly someone will come out. And this time it was his ex-partner, Cassie, and she spoke in November, filed this huge lawsuit. They dated for 10 years, making all kinds of allegations against him.
There she is, quite the stunner, Cassie. Now, she was going after a lot of money from Diddy, and he settled with her pretty much straight away?
With the next day.
Which is unheard of.
Absolutely unheard of. It's completely, you know, absolutely so dramatic that the claim she'd made against him, multiple claims of abuse, that she was sex trafficked, that she was in a very abusive relationship. She was in her teens when they met, and he was in his late 30s. He did sign her to his record label. it just feels like a massive indifference of power and that it was settled so quickly. It does feel that they moved very quickly and were very reactive. But to be honest, with some of these cases in recent times, Lizzo, very popular singer, she was accused by some of her dancers of sexual harassment. Now, it's not on the scale of what we're talking about here with P. Diddy, but she settled that lawsuit. It settled out of court. So this is what seems to happen now because these cases can gain such momentum on social media and they can just blow up and they can destroy careers.
Yeah, and obviously P. Diddy's lawyers have denied all the allegations.
Yeah.
But if someone accused me of something, no matter if it's something small like theft, I don't know if you saw Eborn earlier, my legal advisor, he suggested me thieving, or whether it's something more serious like the stuff that Diddy's facing, I am not going to settle. If I haven't done it, if I've done
anything
wrong...
Have you got enough money to settle, then?
I've got no money to settle, that's a fact. But, you know, we saw it with Prince Andrew. He paid a few million pounds to a woman he'd never met before to settle. And again, Prince Andrew denies any wrongdoing. He denies even having met that woman.
Yeah.
But Usher was 13 years old. Why was a 13-year-old having sleepovers with a man who at the time was in his 40s? And Justin Bieber, video footage of Bieber saying the same thing. Bieber was a 13-year-old and Diddy's on camera saying, I want to have a 48-hour sleepover with him.
Yeah.
It's a bit weird.
Weird. It's very, very uncomfortable. And what we have to remember is we're going back in time now, and I'm not making any justifications that we're going back in time, but it was a different time. It was the late 90s and the noughties. And I'm not defending anything. Hang on, let me finish.
Whoa.
The situation was that P. Diddy, Puff Daddy, as he was then known, was a mentor to a lot of younger artists. And I'm sure they looked up to him. And as Usher was talking about, he was just 13 when he moved in New York. Now, what kind of parent lets their teenage child move in with an adult male that was so popular with so much money? It just reeks of inappropriateness. And Usher was later asked in interviews, would you let your child move in with P. Diddy? He said no.
Well, there you go. I wouldn't let my kid move in with Michael Jackson either. And he was doing it. He was doing it way before Diddy found it cool. But again, Diddy and his team deny anything. How's Jennifer Lopez implicated in this?
Well, she's not implicated. That she was a former partner of P. Diddy.
She dated him.
They dated him. It was around sort of the late 90s, early noughties. And he was very much sort of championed as making her the superstar she is today. But what actually happened back in the day is that they were both arrested after a shooting in a nightclub. And before the legal case came to fruition, Jennifer Lopez did actually end that relationship because of the stigma around being, you know, associated with, you know, a person such as him. And in her recent documentary that's just come out about Jennifer Lopez's many relationships, she did talk about an abusive relationship. Now, there isn't the implication at this moment in time that it was P. Diddy, but obviously fans have speculated very heavily that, you know, that wasn't a very healthy relationship, shall we say, for her.
Who else may be implicated in this this whole Diddy storm? I'm hearing names like Beyonce and Jay-Z.
Yes, it's
the golden couple. It can't be Beyonce, and now her beehive are going to come after me for even insinuating that she's connected to this case at all.
Well, I think we have to be very careful at this moment in time not to kind of implicate anyone.
Not me, mate. This would be an independent public of JJ. I say what I want around here. Beyonce can't touch me.
Well, JJ, you can say what you like, but I think just at this moment,
I want you to say it.
Well, I'm not going to say anything that implicates anyone at this moment in time. But what happens with some of these situations, as we've seen previously, is that anyone who's been associated by association, whether they were at one of these alleged sex parties or not, as we've seen with Prince Harry, has been named on a list of someone who potentially was used to lure other people in through connections and power and whatnot in these situations. But I do think there's going to be a lot of, oh, well, I had a picture taken with P. Diddy, so around that time, could you be implicated? Not of the Prince Andrew picture scandal, because I know that's what you're just going to bring. I can see,
well,
see you dying.
I was just thinking, actually, about Prince Harry, because he's actually named in this lawsuit twice. I don't know how many hundred pages there are in this lawsuit.
I think it's just over 75.
75 pages. Yeah. And he's named twice. So why is he named? What's he been doing?
So he hasn't done anything at all, as far as we're aware. What the legal papers say, this is from the producer who's just been working with P. Diddy. He filed this lawsuit in February, and he is claiming that there were lots of parties, sex parties, that P. Diddy organised, and he used names to kind of lure other people in to engage in some of this, you know, potentially illegal activity. So Prince Harry was someone that he would say, oh, you know, I know Prince Harry. He had a picture taken with him once in 2007, and suddenly these names are being used. But this is what people do in positions of power. They lure in other mechanics to attract more powerful people.
You think P. Diddy would say to people, I've got Prince Harry, the guy whose todger got frozen that time. I've got him coming to a party. And that would make people want to go to the party? That would make me want to say, no, I'm all right, mate. Well, I'm busy, thanks.
I think for a lot of Harry haters, yes, people would want to go. But remember, in the US, royal connections, you know, it's very exciting. It's very, you know, it's what happened with potentially Prince Andrew and Epstein. It was, I know a royal, I can get you royal connections. Maybe not one of our favourite royals, but I think that's just the power of... The power of celebrity and by association is actually incredibly important for people who want to be... Maybe someone's got a lot of wealth, but they're not very cool. They want to go to a party where there's lots of attractive women, there's cool music people. Oh, and there's a prince too.
A fair dues, but I think it's unfair for the press or anyone in media to be tying Harry to this and implicating him at all when he literally had a picture taken with P. Diddy at a concert... for his late mother.
Yeah.
And, by the way, William was also there and is pictured within the same time frame.
Yep. This is why we have to be very careful by association at the moment. There are rumours of different people, you know, high-profile people, you know, being associated with this. But we have to be very careful because now in these days you take a picture with someone and someone could say anything about you and make any claim about you and all the evidence you would have is that photo.
I mean, people should be more concerned about the fact that Harry's related to Prince Andrew. That's me of more concern than anything else. There's, you know,
that's
Andrew,
your concern
Andrew
Harry,
was hanging out with a known paedophile, knowing that the guy's a paedophile in Epstein.
Yep.
That should be a bigger issue, you might think, rather than Harry having a picture backstage.
Absolutely.
Anyway, let's talk about everyone's favourite topic, Meghan Markle.
Oh, no.
And this rebrand. So what's she going to be selling?
So she's going to be... Because she initially had a lifestyle blog.
The Tig. It made about £80,000 a year at its peak, I believe.
I mean, that's not to be sniffed at.
No, you know? I'd take it. I'd take less than that.
But she's rebranding things. She wants to do a bit of a Gwyneth Paltrow-esque gooch thing.
Sell vagina-smelling candles.
It's basically, in the nicest possible way, when celebrities start running out of work, be it films, modelling contracts, come on, it's very true, don't do the face. They then decide to launch a lifestyle brand, which is a very broad term for I could sell a candle, I could sell a tea towel. And the power of celebrities is that people will buy a tea towel if Meghan Markle says, buy this. That's what's very concerning.
She'll make millions off this. She'll make millions, right?
Well, yeah, I think it's about time they maybe perhaps didn't sort of trade off their royal connections and maybe actually did some work. It might be nice to see.
Wait, if they did some work, what are you talking about?
Yeah,
what are you talking about?
We'd have to educate them perhaps in new ways to make cash.
Wow, on that bombshell, you calling Harry and Meghan lazy. Rebecca Toomey, thank you very much for your time. You are watching the Independent Republic of JJ and Scioli. At the top of the next hour, we take a look at all things royal as the nation eagerly awaits King Charles' address to the nation tomorrow. We'll see you then.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Good evening, and welcome to the Independent Republic of Mike Graham with me, JJ and this Yobi. Crikey. You're with Talk on TV, on radio, online, and on your smart speaker. Coming up, Manchester Police reopen their investigation into Angela Rayner's council house tax claims. Plus, fury as a store rebrands Cadbury Easter eggs to gesture eggs as chocolate fans cry woke. And TFL bans comedian Ed Gamble's tour poster from its stations because it features a hot dog. Later in the show, we'll be bringing you a first look at tomorrow's front pages. But before anyone else, we've got an exclusive look at the Metro front page. This, a really, really terrible, sad story. Headline, totally failed. Social workers put baby back in drug-addicted parents' care, then did not check on him amid a catalogue of disasters. So this is the story of Finley Bowden, who was killed by his sadistic parents. He was murdered just 39 days after being handed back to them, a damning review of social services has found. So Finley suffered 130 appalling injuries before he died at just 10 months old. Totally failed by the social workers, who, for some reason or another, they accepted the excuses of the sadistic Stephen Bowden and the mother, Shannon Marsden, and they only made half-hearted attempts to access him. One even overlooked seeing Marsden apparently appearing to buy drugs whilst stood outside the family's filthy home where they lived with the baby. This was a catalogue of failures highlighted in a safeguarding report that included no visits by staff while a social worker involved in Finley's care was off sick for 6 weeks. When the social worker did return, she didn't see Finley because Bowden and Marsden were verbally abusive. 2 days after Finley went back to his parents, a social worker who visited their home was told a bump on his head was caused by a toy. The story continues further in the paper. It is absolutely despicable. I do not understand how this happens time and time again with our social services. If it wasn't Baby P, if you recall, it was 7-year-old Hakeem Hassan. He was an asthmatic boy who died after his mother used his inhaler to smoke crack. Surely, in this day and age, this shouldn't be happening anymore. Our social services must do better and could do better. We'll be bringing you the other headlines from tomorrow later in the show. Moving on now. King Charles will address the nation tomorrow in a special pre-recorded Easter message. It's believed that following Princess Catherine's cancer announcement, Charles wants to reassure the public that the royals remain strong. This comes as the world premiere of Scoop hits the red carpet tonight. Prince Andrew's infamous car crash interview with then Newsnight host Emily Maitlis is being made into its very own film on Netflix. Thrilled to tell you, we've got the amazing journalist and broadcaster and my mate, Afia Hagen, with us in the studio tonight to discuss all the top lines. So, Afia, do we know what Charles is going to say tomorrow?
We do not have any advance yet. We probably will get that in the morning. It is Monday, Thursday tomorrow, so there will be a service that Queen Camilla...
Because of your accent, it sounded like you said, it's Monday, Thursday. And I thought, has she been drinking my whiskey? Because that doesn't make any kind of sense.
I wish I had.
I wish I could share it with you, but, you know, but COVID and that.
Exactly. Maundy.
Oh, forget it. It's Maundy. I'll do the translation. Maundy Thursday, she means.
So that's the service where Queen Camilla gives out Monday money to pensioners. And it's a very emotional service that leads up to Good Friday. So that's where Queen Camilla will be tomorrow. This address, not sure what time it will go out, but given by what's happened before, when monarchs have given out addresses, so King Charles III, when he did his first speech to the nation after his mother's death, that was in the evening. When Queen Elizabeth II addressed us during the COVID pandemic, that was in the evening as well. So I think we can expect it around that time, your kind of 6 p.m., 7 p.m. mark. I think it will be about stability in the royal family, getting through hard times, kind of probably in that vein of Queen Elizabeth II's speech during the COVID pandemic, we will meet again. I think it will be kind of like that. Now, we are going to see the King on Easter Sunday. He is going to attend kind of scaled back church service, if you will, in Windsor. Of course, someone going through chemotherapy tries not to be around crowds, too many people, to reduce the risk of infection. So we can not expect any hugs, kisses, that kind of thing. And probably it will be a reduced service. But I think he is definitely frustrated not being able to get back to work as quickly as he would like. So maybe he'll address that in the speech as well.
I think King Charles has been absolutely fantastic since he shared his enlarged prostate diagnosis and then the cancer diagnosis, and he's been as visible as possible. He's been an absolutely fantastic king. If he wants to avoid catching anything, he should probably not invite Andrew. You never know what you'll catch from that geezer. Is Andrew likely to be there? Come on.
I just had to recover for a minute.
I've thrown you under the bus there.
You did. Thank you so much. You know what? Prince Andrew probably will be there. We saw him at church, Sandringham, Christmas Day. And the thing is, this going to church that they do on special occasions is classed as a private family event. We saw him at the memorial service for King Constantine of Greece. And he actually led the royal family into church, didn't he? Because
despicable.
Prince William wasn't there. We found out later on that was the day when his wife, the Princess of Wales, got her cancer diagnosis. Queen Camilla was already actually in the church, so didn't lead them down the walk to church. I don't think Prince Andrew will do that this time, but I think he probably will be there.
What did he do with his life? All I see is videos and pictures of him driving his Range Rover around the estate, occasionally on a horseback, galloping around. Where's he going to? He's not allowed in Waitrose.
He just goes round in circles.
Literally, that's it.
Yeah, he wishes
that's how he spends his life.
Yeah, he wishes he was down at Pizza Express and working, but he's not.
Princess Beatrice is his daughter, Andrew's daughter.
Yes.
She's rumoured to be stepping up and doing things.
She is rumoured to be stepping up. Now, remember, King Charles III for a long time has been talking about a slimmed down monarchy, less working royals. We have 9 working royals at the moment. The average age of them is about 1 million. only 2 of those working royals are under the age of 50. That's the Prince and Princess of Wales. So we do need some modern glamour injected into
Zara and Mike Tyndall.
Well, Zara and Mike Tyndall are actually really busy. I mean, they have their own brand deals and work that they do in businesses that they run.
And his podcast. Yeah.
Exactly. And well, I think...
Tell them to stop it and come back to the royal family.
I'll give them a ring.
We would love to have them.
Oh, They'd be great.
They're lovely.
They're great. I mean, they were in Australia earlier on for an eventing event at the beginning of this year. And they're so massively popular, you know. They just get on with it and they just get on really well with people. And I think they would be great, but they're already very busy. Now, I think Princesses Beatrice and Eugenie, who do work with a lot of charities and have their own private lives as well, probably perfectly placed to step up. And I think one of them probably will do that and actually will have to do that because, bless them, you've got the Duke and Duchess of Gloucester who do local events, but they are getting on a bit. Say that with all due respect, they are getting on
a bit. Maybe well, maybe don't say they get on a bit. If you mean respect, maybe just say they're old.
They're getting on a bit.
They're getting on a bit.
You know, and then you have Princess Anne who's kind of like shouldering everything. She's doing 11 engagements this week by herself.
Anne's my favourite.
She just gets on with it.
She's quality. I've met her a couple of times. You're going to think I'm obsessed with Andrew because I'm going to mention him again.
Please. Now.
Scoop.
Yes.
The Netflix premieres tonight.
Yes, so the premieres tonight is on Netflix on April the 5th. And this, of course, is the dramatisation of that infamous 2019 award-winning, actually, interview that Emily Maitlis did with Prince Andrew. And that's where, of course, this was... off the back of the Jeffrey Epstein allegations, which I do have to say Prince Andrew continues to deny, but he gave an interview about his associations with Jeffrey Epstein, and that's where we get the lines of, you know, he was in a Pizza Express woking instead of being with him, and that he can't sweat and he couldn't remember meeting Virginia Giuffre. All these lines. And I mean, it is classic, absolutely car crash television. You think to yourself, you know, how did anybody get into a situation where they thought this was a good idea? And clearly they absolutely did think this was a good idea. And now it's being dramatised. Gillian Anderson, Billy Piper, Rufus Sewell in there as well, who plays Prince Andrew.
So you think these stars can bank on the fact they're never going to get an MBE or an OBE now for making fun of the royal family like this?
I think so. I think they've let that ship sail, certainly.
Have you seen it yet?
I haven't seen it yet. I'm hoping to get an advanced Netflix. I'm talking to you.
Oh, okay. All right. Now, I need to speak to you about Prince Philip.
Go on, speak to me about Prince Philip.
You tell me.
And this...
Big Philly and this sculpture.
I mean, have you seen it? This is bonkers. So, this is... Cambridge Council decided to do a statue in memorandum of Prince Philip. 13-foot bronze artwork. It was erected without planning permission. Don't know why you would do that. And the City Council have branded it possibly the poorest quality work it's ever seen. And I think I probably have to agree with them on that. This was to celebrate the Prince Philip's role as a Vice Chancellor of the University of Cambridge. Now, this has been called the Don, 13-foot bronze sculpture, flowing black and gold academic robes and a mortarboard. It's grim.
It is pretty, but it's not supposed to look like Philip.
No, but it doesn't really look like anything.
Well, look, there they are next to each other. I mean, they got the hat right.
And they got the robe. I mean, they kind of got the robes right. It's just £150,000, JJ. Would you pay £150,000 for that?
I wouldn't pay anything for that, mate.
No, neither would I.
No.
Neither would I.
And Philip obviously never got to see the...
Thank goodness.
Have any royals been to see this monstrosity?
No, and I don't think they will.
I would literally turn up there, I'd look at it and be like, what the hell is this?
Literally.
Literally.
What happened here?
Yeah, it looks like something out of Harry Potter.
Not even Harry Potter. I mean, sort of Lord of the Rings.
Yeah, true.
It's otherworldly.
It's otherworldly.
Not in a good way.
Well, you know, on this channel, on this network, we can't talk about the royals without me slamming Prince Andrew for being friends with a paedophile. I must remember to say that.
Yeah.
He denies any wrongdoing.
He does.
But he was friends with a paedophile and he knew that. I must always say that.
Okay.
We must always, as well,
mention
Meghan Markle.
I knew you were going to do that. I just had a feeling. I don't know where it came from. I knew it was coming. Hit me.
Tell me the name of her new website, app, whatever. What is it?
Her new brand is American Riviera Orchard.
Lovely. Well
remembered. Yeah, thank you. I had to dig in the brain for that one, yes. So it's lifestyle, JJ. Will you be investing in trays, glasses, crockery, tea towels, bird baths, knives and forks, all that good stuff.
Right. So Gwyneth Paltrow famously has Goop.
Yes.
The most famous thing she sold was that vagina-scented candle.
Yeah.
Not sure Meghan's going to be selling candles that smell like...
I really hope not.
Yeah, well, I'd hope not.
She's
too classy for that.
Yeah.
But is this going to be... I was talking to Rebecca Toomey, showbiz expert, earlier about this. I predict she's going to make millions from this.
I think she will. I think there's a big market for this. And we're not just talking about in the UK, obviously. In the United States, I think there's a huge market for this. And I think there's lots of people who, some people believe it or not, there's lots of people who love her and will buy into that brand. And actually, they will buy into the brand whether they like her or not. I'm not sure that will influence their decision much. But if the products are good, they're up to scratch, they're quality, and other influencers and celebrities are using them, then people will certainly get involved.
I feel like Meghan and Harry can't really win because
they can't.
People are calling them lazy, they call them grifters, they say they're not creative, they shouldn't be doing that.
Yeah.
Then she launches this rebrand and she's being told off for doing a rebrand.
Yeah.
And why are you using your royal titles for it, et cetera, et cetera. But unlike some of our own royal family, they are making money off their own backs now.
Yeah, absolutely.
And they're not slagging off the royal family this time while doing it.
Exactly. And this is the problem that people will always find something wrong with what they are doing. If they weren't doing anything, you guys are lazy. If they launch a lifestyle brand, how dare you launch a lifestyle brand when, you know, Prince Charles just walked down the road, King Charles just walked down the road, or when, you know, the criticism came that how dare Meghan the Duchess of Sussex launch a lifestyle brand whilst her sister-in-law, Catherine the Princess of Wales, was suffering with cancer. One does not affect the other.
Yeah.
Meghan the Duchess of Sussex didn't know, and she has her own life to live. And also, you cannot bring Meghan and Harry into every single story that's associated with the royal family.
Yes, we can.
Go on.
I'll do it again.
Okay, go on.
Name me a real story, I'll do it.
Just for instance, say Princess Anne lost a shoe.
Yeah, well, where were Harry and Meghan? Yeah? Where were they?
I get you.
Where were they when it happened?
I get you. Princess Eugenie dropped her engagement ring down the plug hole.
Yeah, well, they probably had something to do with it, didn't they?
Right.
You know what they're like.
I see what you've done there.
Those pesky Montecetans. Afria Hagen, I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding, of course. I love Harry and Meghan, truthfully. Afria, thank you so much.
Thank you.
You are watching the Independent Republic of JJ on Talk TV. It's now time for this.
The World of Woke.
This is the Independent Republic of Mike Graham with me, Lord JJ. Now, I'm not one to usually rant and rave, but tonight I'm pretty vexed, if I'm honest. Full disclosure, it's true, I am a very attractive man. It's my gift, it's my curse. But more importantly than that, I'm a Catholic man living in what is supposed to be a Christian country. So you might understand why I'm so perplexed by a Cadbury shop selling what they call gesture eggs. You're not hearing things, I said that correctly. The word Easter has been replaced with the word gesture. Now, why exactly would they make this gesture? I'll tell you why. It's because some bozo thinks that non-Christians will be offended at hearing the word Easter. And because Christians, the world over, never kick up a fuss. When it comes to our religious beliefs being mocked or ridiculed, or in this case, erased, people think they can get away with it. Not this time, mate, not this time. My Muslim friends, my Jewish brothers, my Hindu neighbours, they could not care less about the word Easter. Many of them celebrate Christmas in their own special way, and they certainly splurge on Easter eggs. I've seen it for myself. Now, I'm not stupid. I know chocolate eggs and the Easter bunny have nothing to do with the resurrection of Jesus Christ. But taking away the word Easter, that's only going to cause more animosity and more division in this society. And in this Christian country, we should celebrate our Christian holidays, just like we do for Eid or Diwali or Yom Kippur. To my Muslim friends, I will always say Eid Mubarak when that holiday comes around. Or Good Shabbat to my Jewish mates when I join them for Friday night dinner. It's not a problem. So if you are offended by the word Easter, may I politely suggest you get in the bin, you absolute waste of space. Now, we're doing things a bit differently now that I'm in town. So let's bring in commentator and, again, one of my good mates, Keith Fraser, to join us on The World of Woke. Keith, you have brought me some Easter eggs. My man.
There you go.
Thank you very much.
And let me tell you, Jay, these are Easter eggs. They're not Jester eggs or Jester eggs.
Jester.
And I'll tell you what, you know, I'm lucky I'm in the studio here because I wouldn't want to go banging my head against any walls because they don't think they're made of brick. But the truth is, this is an absolute insult. I'm not a Christian, but I am proud, yes, proud to be a citizen of this great Church of England country.
Yeah.
And I am now going to partake with you, Jay, of course, with hopefully an Easter egg. And this will be a gesture of two fingers, I say no less, to all those people who get offended by me and you having a bit of Easter egg. Because let's face it, it is a joke. In fact, the fact that anyone in Cadbury's or whoever's decided that they're going to call them Jester eggs, it is a gesture. It's a gesture of two fingers to this Church of England country, this great country, this great Britain.
Yeah.
And I say enough is enough, OK? I'm having a bit of Easter egg. That is my gesture to my Christian friends to say, let's celebrate Easter. It's coming on Friday.
Yeah.
There you go.
Cheers. Cheers. Now, it wouldn't be the World of Woke without a trip to Britain's capital of woke, Oxford. Furious drivers are slamming Oxford City Green Party's money-grabbing plan to charge SUV and large vehicle owners more to park in Oxford. These councillors argue that larger and heavier cars cause more damage to roads, are more likely to kill or, at the very least, injure pedestrians, and may cause secondary illnesses through their emissions. Keith, this is just madness. You think it's fair that SUV owners have to pay more? Oh, wait a second. You're gonna say it is fair, isn't it? Because you drive a little smart car. So you're gonna say it's absolutely fair.
I have to say that I'm one of the privileged few who is a two-car family.
Okay? Oh!
I'm very privileged. We do have a smart car, but we've also got an SUV. Now, this is the interesting thing, because I actually think, first of all, this policy in Oxford has come up with some Green Party councillors. Waste of space. Anyone who belongs to that party anyway, in my opinion. The point, you know, let's say they should stick to being a pressure group because they don't have any policies. They live in this delusional, utopian idea. But really, we live in the real society. People want to get around. They want to live. And at the end of the day, they should be paying SUV drivers to drive to Oxford. You know why? Because SUVs are known as sports utility vehicles. They are made for road and rough terrain. Well, I've got to tell you, in this day and age, with our roads, which are no better than a third world country, they are pretty rough terrain. And I've got to say, they should be paying us to drive SUV cars on the rough terrain, a.k.a. our roads, which are a joke. I spend most of my time, Joe, I don't know about you, I don't know if you drive.
Of course I
spend all my time going like this on the steering wheel, trying to dodge the holes in the road.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. These green politicians, or whatever they are, the useless waste of space they are, need to get real. Stop, you know.
You know what's mental is that actually electric vehicles cause more damage to our roads than SUVs because electric vehicles, they're so heavy, the asphalt cannot take it. So if you've got a Tesla or a Prius or any other electric vehicle, there are plenty of them, they are causing more damage to our roads than people like me and you in SUVs.
Well, you pointed out that I've got a smart car. It is an electric smart car.
Oh, you're part of the problem. You're part of the problem, Keith.
Well, that's the thing, Jay. Would they let me into Oxford, my electric smart car, being that they are weighing, and they weigh heavier than a normal petrol or diesel engine?
Yeah.
Well, I, again, I've looked it up in Oxford. They've got all these low emission zones and all these parking tariffs and ridiculous thing. They want to penalise the driver. I wouldn't mind. They don't even use that money to invest in the roads.
Yeah. Right? Now, Keith, you have written a book called Cojones. Am I saying that right?
I have.
And it's all about... Well, Tess, you tell us. What is the book all about?
Well, it's partly about this. It's partly about living life on your terms, being personally accountable, sticking two fingers... I've said that a few times on the show already. But sticking two fingers up a convention... Not listening to the naysayers, and let's face it, society's got all naysayers. You can't say this, you can't say that with offending. It's about taking life by the scruff of the neck and not giving a damn what people think of you. Because at the end of the day, as I always said, and I say it in the book, you wouldn't care so much what people think of you when you realise how little they don't. Yeah. And so that's what the basic book is about. And it's very much anti-woke. It's about not... being the victim. Like, we live in a victim society. Everybody wants to blame someone else for what is not working in their life. How about taking responsibility for yourself? And that is the name of the book. And I think, and I do believe, that if people lived on that basis in life, a bit more personal accountability, not pointing a finger at someone else, because remember, when you point your finger at someone else, you've got four fingers pointing at yourself, then you're gonna be more authentic, you're gonna live life as the way we should do. That's what I say.
Absolutely. Well, speaking of woke, comedian Ed Gamble's advert for his upcoming tour, Hot Diggity Dog, has been altered after TfL claims it promotes obesity. TfL bosses have banned the comedian's tour poster because it features a hot dog. But they have approved an alternative with a cucumber instead. Crazily enough, it's not the first time tube bosses have cracked down on junk food-related adverts. Another poster promoting a forthcoming West End play was banned in July because it featured a wedding cake. So, is seeing a hot dog going to make you want to go out and eat one, or do you prefer to have a big cucumber in your mouth?
I'm somebody who watches my weight, but I'm going to, again, stick the proverbials up at these people who don't want to promote obesity. Look at me. Look at this. I'm having a gesture in. Look, and I'm not afraid to do so. Okay, I'll put on a couple of pounds, but so what? You know what? At the end of the day, Jay, in all seriousness... Nice, actually. In all seriousness... It is becoming a joke. You can't have a wedding cake on something called Tina or whatever is his wedding, the advertising, because it encourages obesity. If you can't have a bit of cake at a wedding, when can you? Mm. Okay? I read situations like this, Operation Mincemeat. They don't like the advertising. Sadiq Khan's got this very... he's got his rules in place for certain adverts. Focus on London. Focus on knife crime instead of wasting your time on what is being advertised on the billboards. At the end of the day, like I said, Operation Mincemeat. I haven't seen it yet. I've heard it's very good. Okay. Are they going to start looking at the titles of shows soon? I've seen that on underground and buses. You know, what are they going to say? Well, it's got to be halal mincemeat. Or it's got to be... You can't call it mincemeat because you're going to annoy the vegans.
Yeah.
I mean, with all due respect. I mean, as I said, I wish you had some brick walls in here because I would actually bang my head against... It's a joke, no?
It is. The London Underground is turning into North Korea. You know, you can't do anything on there now. I like to have a drink on my way out for a night out. If I'm on the tube, I've got a little tinny, I'll have a swig. But I see people taking pictures of people drinking alcohol beverages on the tube as if they're going to go and report it to someone. It's become insane.
Well, Boris Johnson was the guy who banned alcohol in the Underground, I believe. And listen, we won't talk about him for all the wonderful things that he did. But look, it is becoming a joke. I mean, look, like I said, you can't walk through the street and pass wind without people frowning. You know,
I think it really is.
I mean, with all due respect, you've got fresh air, or not so fresh in London, even with the congestion charge or the pollution tax, whatever you want to call it. Look, you know, at the end of the day, you've got to live your life. And that's one of the things that I was saying about my book, Jay, is that you've got to live your life. You can't sort of scrutinise everything and walk on eggshells.
So what advice would you give to Sadiq Khan? He needs some bigger cojones, clearly. If Sadiq Khan came out and said, you know what, people, if you see a hot dog on an advert on my transport system and you want to eat a hot dog, that's on you. One finger pointing to you. That's up to you what you want to do with your life. Or my job is to provide transport for you and clean air and stop knife crime. I'm not doing any of those things. He needs some bigger cojones. What would you advise Sadiq Khan to be doing with his
life? Well, I'll tell you what I'd advise you, Sadiq. OK, by the way, I'm not voting for you come May. I'm very sorry about that. But what I would do, it's Ramadan, and I know that you're an observant Muslim, OK? Why don't you forget this obesity nonsense? Again, have a bit of gesture egg, or actually, sorry, I shouldn't call it a gesture egg. Let's call it an Easter egg.
Easter egg,
call it
what it is. Thank you.
Have a bit of Easter egg, number one. And why don't you break your Ramadan fast on it? How about that for Ramadan, Kareem? You know, I'm being serious now. Okay, that would be great for cultural diversity as well.
To break
because
his
fast. Breaking the fast of the holy month of Ramadan, great, on an Easter egg. How about embracing that? That is great message out to all the Christians. And let's face it, we live in a Church of England country, so why not?
That's right. Well, Keith, are you going to stand for mayor?
Am I what?
Are you going to stand for mayor?
Are you going to pay for my sponsorship? Because I think it costs about 5,000.
I think it's 10 grand now.
I think it's 10 grand now.
10 grand in London, I believe.
Well, I'll tell you what.
Have you got the cojones to do it, Keith?
Well, it's not so much that. You know, you get people like me moaning at how bad a job they all do. So I don't know if I can really take that. But there you go. You never know your luck. You never know your luck.
Super. Keith Fraser, thank you very much, my man.
Thank you, Jay.
Super. You are watching the Independent Republic of JJ and Miss Yobi. Coming up after the break, a Labour MP has been thrusted into spotlight for all the wrong reasons, of course. Stay tuned. Welcome back. You're watching the Independent Republic of JJ and Miss Yobi. Police are to look again at claims Labour Deputy Leader Angela Rayner broke the law when previously living between two ex-council houses. A detective chief inspector at Greater Manchester Police promised to review and reassess following an initial decision that there was no evidence of any offences. Miss Rayner has faced weeks of scrutiny over her living arrangements in the 2010s following her marriage to Mark Rayner. Now, my war cabinet are back with me, Eve, Megan and Andrew. Megan, what has Angela Rayner actually been accused of? I'm confused by this story.
So she's been accused, as far as I understand it, of buying her council home and then not living in it, selling it, living with her husband and then selling it, I believe, at profit, which is not something you're really allowed to do. The rules confuse me as I've never owned a home.
OK.
But, yeah, she's denied it. She said when she married her husband, they then lived separately, but the opposite is... She's being accused of the opposite being true. I do believe that if she has broken these rules, then she's bought a house. I think the issue is she's bought a house at way below market rate.
OK. Eborn?
I'll tell you what it is, Eborn. Pay attention, Eborn. I'll tell you what's going to happen.
At ease.
I'm always at ease.
Yeah, you should have gone to
him. I should have gone to the lawyer.
You should have gone to the
lawyer.
He's a lawyer.
I love it. We can sort of guess what she's accused of. We'll just make up the offence, whatever happens.
The reason why I was... I think... I don't want to get
Megan,
sued.
Megan, you did a fantastic job.
You did a fantastic
job. Now, let's go to the real legal...
Do you remember that thing? It was not Call My Bluff, was it? It wasn't that one.
She's far too into that.
I don't think it wrong and get sued.
You won't get sued for having an opinion.
MP James Daily, he asked the Greater Manchester Police to examine claims that Labour's deputy leader did not declare her main residence accurately. And this is what they're sort of looking at. So this, they have rules and regulations about what you can declare and so on and so forth. It is going through the process, so we have to be careful. You're right. Everybody's entitled to a fair trial. Even Angela Rayner's entitled to a fair trial. So that's exactly basically it. So they need to look at... So police are reviewing the decision not to investigate her over claims she might have broken the relevant electoral law. So they're reviewing it at the moment. The jury's still out, and until that's happened, it's very difficult for us to comment.
Yeah. Eve, do you think people really care? I really could not give a monkey's.
I think this is a way to make her... Because it's a council house, I think this is a way to make her look, you know, very fiendish and money-grubbing. But ultimately, could you say you wouldn't do the same if you had an opportunity, you had two houses, you could make a good profit on one?
Yes, I categorically can say I would never do that. I'm not a fiend. I'm a dictator, but I'm certainly not a fiend. OK. Would you do it?
I can't comment because I'm not a homeowner. but I wouldn't say no.
Okay.
Being on the property ladder is one of the few ways you can actually get fairly wealthy in this country.
I think the problem is, this is where I gather, this is what my problem is with the story. Council houses are in short supply. They've always been in short supply. And, you know, right to buy has been criticised by Labour for this very reason. And, you know, the whole fat cat of it all.
Yeah.
It just doesn't look good.
I've no doubt if this was a Tory
actually
MP.
Like, yes. Yeah, exactly.
If it was a Tory MP, Labour
really
would
like
be
Angela
saying,
Rayner.
You've got to step down, you've got to resign, yeah. Recorder for your head. 100%.
Yeah. Absolutely. And that's the problem.
Right. Yeah.
What's interesting as well, I mean, she's obviously denied any wrongdoing, which is why we in the interest of balance and fairness, we have to say that's the case. They need to look at it. What I always say is that justice is blind. So what we need to do is work on that basis. It's irrelevant that the guy's a Tory MP complaining about Angela Rayner, but they made that point. The fact is there should be rules for everybody,
yeah.
And they should be investigated. And my concern is that we shouldn't sort of just make it political. It should turn around and say, this is what the law says. The law says we have to investigate it. Let's see what happens. Yeah. Go through the due process. Yeah. You'll have your chance to defend yourself. Don't have a trial in the media. That's what I would
absolutely.
Say.
Well, things are looking, I think, better for the Tory party. Jonathan Gillis has been named as the one of the new deputy chairs.
Yep.
I mean, no one knew about this guy before he came on Talk TV, if I'm honest with you.
You made the guy. You made him.
We basically made Gillis, yeah? And I've been calling him all day. He's not answered any of my phone calls. So he's going to get a very nasty voice note from
me. Oh, I think that's his career ruined now.
That's it. He's going to fall down faster than he climbed up. But, Eve, I think this is a pretty good... A good signing, so to speak, for the Tories.
Yeah, they've signed on a good player.
Yeah.
I'm not sure one good signing can really erase the...
14 years.
Yeah, and also the failures with how they've rolled out the budget, the way they're trying to sort of split their appeal down the middle in order to, please voters. I think they've done a lot of U-turns on their character as a party, and I don't necessarily think this will spell out good news for them.
I think it should be good. But is this simply happening because Lee Anderson left and went to Reform and they didn't want Jonathan Gillis, who I think is pretty popular with his constituents?
Yes.
Is that why this has been done?
I'm not sure about the issue would be that they didn't want to, lose him to Reform. I think it's more about, you touched on it really, about getting another Lee Anderson character in. And as
you say that with a glint in your eye that you're not happy about this.
No,
like it's a bad idea to have someone who connects with the people.
No. Actually, you read my face completely wrong. Look, I think it's actually a good idea. I think they're just, as you say, you made him. So he was a bit of an unknown character. And I think, and it's kind of how the general public got to know Lee Anderson as well. And he is kind of a free speaker and a little bit of a baller. So I think the public are going to warm to him. Do I think it's going to change anything? No, ultimately not.
Eborn, my legal advisor. For Gillis personally,
yes.
Once you get in the cabinet or in a deputy position, it raised your popularity.
Well, as I say, you made him, so well done you. And I think the reality is this. There will be lots of checks in the post. What's going to happen? There are going to be lots of characters. It's going to be fascinating. You couldn't write this stuff. Mm. Fact is stranger than fiction. What's going to happen? The Conservatives are not going to do as bad as people predict. There's going to be lots of things which are going to turn around. And Rishi's five-point pledge, more and more of it will come into reality. I always talk about inflation. That was an easy one when it was 11%. Yeah. Say you're going to halve it. I can tell you, be closer to 2 by the time they get the election, which will be in October, I can predict that as well.
It's been a long time.
It's going to be a long time.
It's been at 2%.
Absolutely. Yeah. So it's going to be very simple on that sort of basis. But you're going to get characters. People like characters with convictions. Mm-hmm. And people can turn around and say, look, we know, relate to the people of the electorate. And this is what's going to happen. People forget that Boris used to be the Carlsberg of politicians. He reached part of the electorate that other politicians couldn't reach. He then turned into this Marmite character, which people love or hate. But that's what you need. You need a politician who can reach and genuinely understand the concerns of this country.
But these politicians that are being, these populist politicians, they often do start out their political career as very likeable and very relatable. But I find it's a certain brand of chauvinism.
It becomes,
like, relatable chauvinism, if that makes sense.
It becomes their Achilles heel. And, when Boris was loved by the public and he's a great campaigner, and it was very fun when he was London mayor and he was bumbling about the town.
Boris buses,
But then we put him in the biggest office of state and it stopped being funny.
Yeah.
And that's so you're right there. And Boris's Achilles heel was his popularity, and he let that get the best of him, and he made bad decisions because of it, because he was so used to... He couldn't cope with people not liking him.
Yeah, well, well, that's human nature. When JJ and I get asked to stand, which happens virtually daily, we turn around and say we'd rather have these platforms and actually make sure that we talk about the issues that people care about. That's so important.
I will never stand.
Why not?
Because I'm the dictator of this republic. I don't need to stand. I'm already in power.
And I stand for nothing.
Jonathan Gunness did tell me a little while ago that in his constituency, North Stoke-on-Trent, potholes, local transport and jobs were the most important things. Yes. Like immigration, it was those things. And the NHS, which, oddly enough, is what we're moving on to next. Because public satisfaction with the NHS has dropped. Mm. It has dropped to an all-time low. Fewer than a quarter of Brits said they were satisfied with the health service in 2023 in a British Social Attitudes poll. Eve, are you satisfied with the NHS? Why are you rubbing your hands together with the plea? I said the NHS, no one likes the NHS, and Eve goes,
No, I'm ready to take aim.
All right, shoot. I'll let you land, as the kids say.
Right, to be fair, at the point of emergency care, I think the NHS is fantastic. I think the nurses and doctors work very hard. I think GPs work hard as well. In terms of getting diagnosis and further treatment, the wait times are ridiculous. I know they said today that it has been reduced, the wait times are lesser, but overall, there is this sense of dissatisfaction. More people are turning private. A lot of GPs are now referring people for, you know, outsourcing to private doctors for sort of elective operations and things. And I think it just needs a rehaul. I think that the fabric of the NHS has been ripped up. I think people are dissatisfied. A lot of people are leaving. And the people that are there have worked very hard. And I don't think they're appreciated enough.
Yeah, I think I'd agree with that. Megan, has our perception of the NHS changed? Because essentially, it used to be, I think it's been seen generally by the public as Labour are the party who are always going to defend the NHS and stick up for them, and the Tories are the ones who are going to take away the money. But actually, people are starting to realise the NHS is not perfect. And even Wes Streeting, who's probably going to be the next Health Secretary, is saying throwing buckets of money at it is not the solution anymore.
I was actually going to raise Wes Streeting because
I read your mind.
Yeah.
What a great dictator.
I really respect him saying he's not going to have a campaign pretending to be one of those politicians that's going to save the NHS, because it's simply not possible. Not to sound like a lefty hippie, but I think something that we do have is the legalisation of marijuana and fast-tracking that. I think it has been proven in the United States to be great for many health ailments where we're using expensive drugs to treat that don't always work. So I just wanted to plug that here. However, it is a money... It's a bureaucratic money pit. And people always say, oh, where's that extra 350 million quid that we were promised with Brexit? We've had it. Mm-hmm. And we've had more than that a week. And it's still not getting any better. And Labour have said doctors' salaries are not going to improve, junior doctors' salaries are not going to improve. The Tories have said it's not going to improve from where they are. So I know that the NHS is a religion, but the strikes, we have to just get real and say the strikes aren't helping.
Yeah.
They're really not helping. Of course we're not going to reduce. And everyone says, oh, we just need to fund it more. No, this is, funding it more is not going to get us out of the situation. I, of course, want it free on the point of, like, emergency. I don't know what the answer is.
Maybe a system like France, where you pay a small fee at the point of, you know, and it will lessen people just going to A&E and stuff just for, I don't know,
I've looked at that around the world. Well, what's bizarre, though, you only have to look back not so far when people were standing on their doorsteps clapping the NHS for all the stuff that they've done.
Yeah.
And actually, if you look around the world at the different systems that are in place, healthcare for everybody at the point of entry has to be right. You have to make
course,
sure. And you see
course.
Some countries where people, if you're, the first thing they do is pat you down and see if you've got a card. Which can't be right. You have to make sure that we have healthcare for everybody, but we need to make sure it's efficient. And one of the solutions, as I always talk about, is artificial intelligence will help maximise. It will. And I'll tell you what.
This crazy futurist. It's
not only the futurist, it's telling you now. So I can tell you, chatting to ChatGPT is more effective than chatting to your GP. It has more. They did a survey in the University of California, San Diego.
Yeah,
and they did a survey and they said it was more empathetic, had more time, and more accurate. That's what happened. That's the future.
Not with my nurses. No, look, let's move on to another British institution.
Go on,
the Uxbridge boat race.
Oh, I love it.
It's been slapped with a warning. One of you three, tell me what's going on.
I'll tell you what's going on. It's the Thames. The Thames, which used to be gloriously full of fish. And you could go, it was true. You could get your salmon in there, get your eels and everything else. They're now so worried about how polluted it is that they're advising rowers that if you've got a sore on you or anything, you better cover it up. You better not go and drink the water if it gets in your mouth, because you'll get all these horrible diseases.
This isn't new, though. Eve, do you remember, what's his name? David Baddiel?
Yeah.
David Baddiel. Remember him? Of course, that's him.
From Matt Lucas's partner.
Well, David, no, that was the other. No,
David Williams.
Yes,
he went swimming. Yes. In the Thames and got sick.
Yes.
A lot of people are getting like really disturbing diseases from going into the Thames.
Why are people going to the Thames?
Yes.
Why are you doing
drunk
that?
Students.
Right.
Drunk students and the like. Don't ask how I know that. But yeah, so I think this isn't new, that rivers contain diseases. I think that's probably been the same since, you know, Tudor times. Obviously,
worse than Tudor
millions
times.
Of tonnes JJ of sewage was dumped into our water system last year. And that is terrifying to think. Like, you know, people go swimming in the sea. That's where it filters all out to, and people go swimming there.
Sewage in our rivers.
It's disgusting.
You might say we've got quite the poo done it.
Hey, look at you with the puns. Can I say the puns tonight have been brilliant? I like the people took all credit to those in the gallery. And with things like border fast that people missed at the beginning, which is one of my favourites. So that's a little Banksy line.
Yeah.
And I love poo-demic and whatever it is.
Poo done it.
Poo done it. Absolutely.
Yeah. It's fantastic.
Always a thrill.
Harley Jones is a fantastic producer. But on a very serious note, XL seagulls or XL gullies, as they're being called.
In Liverpool.
What are they feeding them up there? So what's the story?
Oh, I'll tell you the story. It's very simple. If you go to any seaside, I know all these stories. You go to any seaside resort, they will tell you that one of the biggest dangers when you're having your chips on the end of the pier, which we like to do every Saturday.
Of course.
You go there, the seagulls will come in and take them. What they've got, because Liverpool does things about much bigger and better than anybody else, they have now XL seagulls, which are terrifying. They are terrifying. Alfred Hitchcock, eat your heart out. They are terrifying the locals.
It's the XL rats in Luton as well. I think it's the steady British diet that is causing these monstrosities. Seagulls and rats on steroids. But they can eat... wasn't there a case where a seagull swooped down and picked up somebody's dog and dropped it?
If there's too many seagulls...
Sorry for interrupting.
No, it's fine.
I know you're the dictator.
I am a fair dictator.
I know
you may speak.
There is a video that went viral a while ago of a seagull eating a rat, swallowing it whole in the UK.
Oh.
My life has never been as good since before I watched that.
Maybe we could just cull some of these seagulls if they're too big.
Cull the gulls.
Look, here's a video of a seagull.
Here's the seagull. Look at that.
The seagull literally walked into the shop, helped himself to pack the crisps, and flew off.
Quite right. Yeah.
Shoplifting is just going crazy in this country, isn't it?
The birds.
Absolutely.
There he is. Look at them go.
That's quite good. Are they? What brand is that? That's the posh
brand. What brand is that? You can't mention that unless they sponsor us.
Well, look, let's stick with animals. Tell me about this hedgehog.
I'll tell you about the hedgehog.
No, not you. Not you. Quiet, Ebon. Eve, I want you to tell me about the hedgehog. You don't know about the hedgehog, do you?
Know.
No. Megan, do you know about the hedgehog?
Yes.
I do. It feels like question time.
Yes.
I know, it's really scary. It's actually really, like, alarming. Like, I do know. The top of someone's hat
was
been nursed to health overnight by...
Thank goodness.
A somewhat, I'm assuming, blinding woman. It seems like she might need glasses.
That's kind of wholesome.
It's very wholesome.
So this woman, she nursed what she thought was a baby hedgehog all night, and then in the morning she found out actually it's just a bobble off the hat.
But it did look very realistic. And the thing that went all over the media, there's the picture of this dog food or whatever hedgehogs eat, and there's this picture of this pom-pom hat. And I think you probably see it there. But what happens then, everybody, as a result of it, started telling their own stories. And you had people who were driving onto school and their children were crying because they saw a hedgehog. Uh-huh. There was one particular guy who stopped the car and everybody sort of applauded him. And he went up to this thing and he realised when he approached it, and all the traffic had stopped, it was actually horse manure. But because
Good
because,
grief.
Because everybody was watching him, he then scooped it up.
Right. And Ebon, he threw it into the dish. That is enough force in your, out of your mouth. Enough.
True.
My cabinet, thank you
thank
very
you.
Much.
Thank you.
You are watching The Independent Republic of JJ and Isiobi. And after the break, fresh off the press, we've got the very best of tomorrow's news tonight. Stay right there. Welcome back to The Independent Republic of JJ and Isiobi. Let's look at some other stories from tomorrow's papers now. And I am joined by my magnificent cabinet. Come on. At ease, cabinet, at ease. It's been a long day. It's been a very long day. Now, we're going to start with the front page of The Sun. Another terrible story, such sad news. Ebon, do you want to talk us through this?
No, it's really, really sad. Those who are fans of Gogglebox will know George, who's only 40, and the tragic news that we've just had is that he's fallen to his death. And the shocking news, this is why it sort of made the headlines. And Daniela Westbrook was sort of saying he's gone too soon. I'm absolutely gutted. I'm sure lots of other people who worked with him will realise what a superstar he was. He was also a telly favourite. He also appeared on a Celebrity Big Brother, if I remember rightly. Mm. And apparently what happened, he fell from a great height at a warehouse. Tragically, is no longer here.
Yeah, I've seen plenty of tributes going out to him from people like Nadia Essex and other reality TV stars. Eve, do you ever watch Gogglebox with him, or you, Megan?
No.
I did, yeah. It's really sad. Gogglebox type of show just kind of comes on. Yeah, it seemed like a nice guy, nice family.
Very bubbly.
Really sad. I feel really, as well as obviously feeling horrible for the family, I feel really horrible for his colleagues.
Yeah.
Like, what a traumatic event.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I hope they have support at work, especially from their employer.
It's really sad.
Eve, talk to me about the licence fee. I spoke about this earlier in the show. My legal advisor, Ebon, said that I should not be telling people to break the law by not paying the licence fee, so I won't repeat it. But what news do you have for us about the BBC licence fee?
So, it could be £200 by 2028, but there is a question in The Sun, you know, as it goes up £10.50 next week, is it really worth it?
Well, yeah. Well, you tell me. Do you think it's worth it?
Not really, to be honest. When you can get Netflix, Prime and, you know, the holy trinity of Prime, Disney and Netflix, you know, going back to the BBC feels like a bit of a poor relation sometimes. I'm not going to deny the documentaries are fantastic, but it's not worth paying £200 for.
It works out at £16 a month. That is literally the price of it, at least Netflix and Amazon together.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And you can get a lot of the stuff that's on the BBC on other channels.
You can't get Strictly, you can't get Match of the Day. Megan, you think it's worth paying?
I have it, I think.
You think you have the TV licence?
Because I live in shared house, but
you
I don't
think you have
contribute.
It. Well, I'd like to send the police round.
That's the police, they're round the corner.
Yes, send the Rozzers round. We found one.
But I also don't watch Strictly or Match of the Day.
Right, fine.
I don't require the BBC. I listen to the radio.
Well, you're paying for that. That includes it. It's all
at
part
work.
Of that. Oh, gosh. Ebon, would you pay?
Very simple. And I'll tell you what it is. I host and produce for the Royal Television Society their podcast. And I interviewed the great and good for the BBC, who started off. And the question has to be, do we need the BBC? What you have to do is to work out, in today's diseased information age, do we need a public broadcaster more than at any time ever? There's a cost element to that. And some of the programmes can be done by other channels, but certain things which are hard-hitting, which are not commercially viable in and of themselves, we need to find a different way of doing
it. That I completely agree with. And I think lose the BBC altogether would be really sad. And I think as a news outlet, it's really fundamental to keep the balance in the UK press.
It is, but if you want truth, just come here to the Independent Republic of JJ. I only tell you the truth, only. Now, move on. Page 28, 29, double-page spread in The Sun. Headline, vile slurs about Kate, death threats to Meg's enemies, trolls who are proudly hashtag Sussex Squad. So this is all about the Sussex Squad on social media. Who knows about the Sussex Squad? I'm too old for this.
I know about the Sussex
Fill me
squad.
In, young right. Eve.
Right, so Omid Scooby, who was the biographer for the Sussexes, has started a few hashtags and, you know, was a sort of central figure to the Kate conspiracy theories. Sussex Squad are people who support Meghan and Harry. Yeah. I'm just so tired of this. I'm tired of this rivalry. I think it's really sad that a woman with cancer had to be the adult in the room. while everyone was saying she had a BBL, and you know, it just says a lot. And I don't know how much Meghan and Harry have had, you know, a hand in the social media stuff themselves. I highly doubt that they've been sitting there typing out hashtags, but yeah. It, you know, the implication isn't good, and I just think it needs to stop.
I totally agree with you. Let's end on a high note. Ebon, this one is right up your street.
It wouldn't be right up my street.
Fish getting high on coke.
Yeah, right.
Just tell them what's going on.
I'll tell you what's going on. This is all about polluted water again and so on and so forth. And what they're saying is that every fish and marine animal is full of cocaine, they say, as sewage spills into the UK seas. This is apparently some research. We were talking about salmon earlier. I was telling you about the glorious things that we used to find in the Thames. Uh-huh. Well, now these fish are basically, because of the pollution that we're doing, high on coke.
Wait, so what? People are flushing cocaine down the drain?
It does seem like it's a strange story,
waste.
This,
what
isn't
waste?
It?
Yeah. It's a joke.
No, but I'm assuming it's... It cut urine?
Yeah, it's true.
Oh.
That's how... Like, it's not like people are flushing their contraceptive pill down the drain. We've known about this phenomena for a while because yes. We've known that... Fish, I don't know. I think I read a story that it's responsible for men's reducing sperm count. There's so much contraceptive pill in the water. I wow. think I read that.
I've heard about that
no
as
one,
well.
Yeah, no one quote me. You might have to Google that.
As you know, I present a series called Fake or Fact, and we look at these stories and you dig a bit deeper.
Was
we
really
need
true?
To dig a bit
we need
deep
to dig deeper. Well, I'll tell you what, Ebon, I would imagine that the fish in your area have very high.
They have really good
dealers.
Absolutely.
I bet they do.
It's awful.
I bet they do. I'm only joking. I'm only joking. Well, thank you, Cabinet. It's been
it's
fantastic.
An absolute delight.
That is all from me tonight. You've been watching The Independent Republic of Mike Graham. Thank you to my wonderful Cabinet, and I'll see you tomorrow at 7 p.m. only on Talk TV. Good night.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
We're all looking to make more sustainable choices, but making your own shoes out of natural materials could pose a few challenges. At the Allbirds Innovation Lab, they're doing all the sciencey stuff like research and testing to create shoes from natural materials, like leather made from plants, eucalyptus tree fiber, and sugarcane. It's not rocket science, it's shoe science. Allbirds is making shoes better than natural. They're super natural. Find your perfect pair at allbirds.com today. That's ALLBIRDS.com.